How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are broadcasting here live from beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, the home of UFC 148 last night. Silva versus Sonnen 2. We've been talking about this fight forever, and it is now over. Mike Sempervivi and I are going to recap the entire event over the next several minutes, talking about the current, I was going to say new, but it's not a new champion, the current UFC middleweight champion, Anderson Silva, who did successfully defend his title against Chael Sonnen last night with a pro wrestling style running knee, not quite to the face, but very close. We're going to talk about that, plus the Tito Ortiz retirement bout, all of the weekend events here in Las Vegas. This is the new WrestleMania weekend for UFC. Every July 4th weekend, they're going to be here in Vegas doing a mega event. And this was number one, and it was a mega event. Obviously, we don't have a buy rate yet, but it was the biggest gate in U.S. UFC history. Not internationally. Toronto beat it by about double. But in the U.S., the biggest gate in UFC history. It was a packed house at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. Dana White claimed the early trending numbers indicated it was going to be the biggest pay-per-view they had ever done. That would mean in excess of 1.7 million buys. I don't think that's the case. I would be stunned if this beat the numbers of UFC 100. But that's what he said. So I guess we'll find out. I think it's going to hit about 1.1 million. It'll be the biggest UFC event of the year. It was a gigantic night. Now, where do they go from here? Another question entirely. They've got a UFC show on Wednesday that, quite frankly, nobody is going to watch. So we're going to talk about that. Plus, tonight, Destination X, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern on pay-per-view. It will be most likely TNA's best pay-per-view of the year, or at least one of them. It's got a great lineup. Got a lot of great wrestlers on the show. We're going to talk about that here on the program as well. Plus, Raw is Monday night. Only a couple of nights left until you're going to be watching that show for 3 hours every Monday night. So we're going to talk about all of this and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. I am here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada, the home of UFC 148 last night, Sonnen versus Silva. And I do not have in front of me the Figure Four Online staff picks for this show, but I did poorly. And I actually almost did even worse because I thought for sure that Tito Ortiz won that fight last night, but he didn't. But, Mike, let's talk about some of these picks here. How did you go in terms of the main fights?
I went 4-1. Dave Meltzer and Todd Martin also went 4-1 as well. Their loss was the Cote fight. They had both picked Cote. I picked Kung Lee. But I took the Korean stun gun, so they ended up topping me there. Mike Sawyer and Josh Nason finished 3-2. You didn't finish dead last. You were 2-3. Oliver Kopp took some gambles and finished 1-4. So, you didn't end up too bad this time around, even though you got those picks in so late.
Well, you know what happens is I could probably pick better. I mean, obviously I could if you saw my results last night. But there's always that part of me that I was going over my picks, and I actually would have been 3-2 because I was expecting Chad Mendes to defeat Cody McKenzie, but I was sitting there about to do my picks, and I was just like, what the hell? Cody McKenzie by guillotine, because I do that sometimes. And in fact, Cody McKenzie did not win by guillotine. He was nearly killed by Chad Mendes. And poor Dana, or poor Cody, actually. Dana buried Cody last night. He's talking about it was a mismatch and apologizing to Chad Mendes for giving him such a bad opponent, and it was a rough night for Cody McKenzie. But let us talk about the main event. Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen. This, I had, in fact, predicted second round by Anderson Silva. And it was interesting because the fight went virtually exactly like the first fight, in the first round at least. And the story of the fight, I don't know if I mentioned this on this program or if it was another program, but the first fight these guys had, I was picking Anderson Silva. And the reason for that is because I firmly believe that Anderson Silva had a bad rib in that fight. And when you've got a wrestler on top of you and you've got a bad rib, it's a nightmare. And the fact of the matter is, as much as everybody wants to talk about how Anderson Silva took a beating for 4.5 rounds in that first fight, the fact of the matter was, in the end, he won that fight. Exactly as he said in all of the promos, I won the fight. That's true. He got the submission at the end of the 5th round. Now, in this fight here, like in the first fight, what he did was he displayed, more than anything else, his jiu-jitsu prowess. In that he was taken down in this fight by a big, strong, mean wrestler, and he could not get up for a round. So what he did was the absolute best he could to protect himself from the bottom, to survive. And he did. And he actually took very little damage in that first round. I was sitting next to people that were like, oh my God, first round at 10-8. And I was like, that wasn't a 10-8. He took the guy down and he threw a lot of punches, but Anderson Silva did a great job defending. And what happened? Chael Sonnen, after cutting like 30 pounds for this fight, was tired in round 2. And he couldn't take the dude down. And then he tried a goofy spinning back fist and fell face first into the cage. And then Silva with a picture-perfect flying knee to the chest, and he finished the fight. I mean, it was exactly what you do with a guy like Chael Sonnen. You survive against him until he gets tired, and then you beat him, which is exactly what happened in the first fight. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was really, really surprised, actually, with how tired. And Sonnen's one of those guys anyway when he's in there with the scowl on his face and just how he looks and the fact that his face really does show punishment rather easily. I mean, he always looks kind of a little bit more worn than sometimes he really is, but he really was worn in that second round. And the fact of the matter was, even if he didn't, you know, people are lamenting that back fist. I know he's upset with himself and the whole nine yards, but the reality of the situation was Anderson Silva did a great job protecting himself, was probably going to do that if Sonnen took him down again. And as long as it was on the feet, as much as Sonnen is a hard head, as much as he loves to stand in there and throw those punches, Anderson Silva is just too good. He's too nasty. He is too sharp. And he would have ended up slicing up Sonnen anyway. I think that was an inevitability because of how, again, I'm not saying he looked weak or anything like that, but he was, you know, a step behind as he was in the first round when he took, you know, Silva down. It is kind of amazing how Sonnen can be so much of Silva's kryptonite without actually being kryptonite. And it raises the question again when we're talking about these three matchups that are going to be coming up and who is going to be the one to face Anderson Silva next. You know, it's disappointing it won't be John Jones. It's disappointing it won't be a George St. Pierre or somebody like that, because it's going to be getting crazy with who do you put up there against Anderson Silva.
I don't know. I've never done an MMA fight, but I have trained very hard in the past. And I have always found personally that I perform better when I don't train so hard. And I remember last night, before the Silva fight, they showed a video. It was actually before the weigh-ins. It was the prime time. And they showed this video of Chael training, and he was training so hard. And he had just come back from a jog, and he fell down on the ground, and he was just wailing in agony. And I was like, okay, you know, I have never done a UFC fight, but I've also never jogged so hard that I've wailed in agony. And when I think about the amount of training that he did at his age, and on top of that, you add in a 30-pound weight cut, and part of me thinks, you know, if you didn't train so hard and you didn't cut so much weight, you probably would have done a hell of a lot better tonight. But we're never really going to know the answer to these questions, because nobody's going to go into a big fight and say, okay, I'm not going to train so hard and I'm not going to cut so much weight. And the few guys that do go in there and they don't cut weight, like Frankie Edgar, who's, you know, he's very effective, not cutting weight at all. He weighs 156 and he goes in and fights at 155, or maybe cuts a pound or two. But, you know, he goes in there and he does fine. And people are like, ah, well, you know, he's this, that, blah, 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 aberration, whatever. And part of me just thinks, everybody, this is why this card used to be one thing and now it was something totally different, because so many people got hurt. It's because you train way too hard, you're all killing yourselves, and on top of that, there's the new insurance deal where you don't have an incentive. In the old days, you had an incentive to fight if you were hurt, because then you could get your injury covered. Now you get your injury covered no matter what, so people just pull out of fights, because wins and losses are very important in UFC. But I just watched that fight and I was like, man, Chael, biggest fight of your life and you got tired after round one. I mean, something's going wrong here somewhere.
Well, think of all that mental pressure that was on him too. I mean, I think of all of that. And realistically too, and I mean, Sonnen has done a great job in that fight with Silva. He reinvented Silva because remember, Dana was talking about him, you know, being a champion who fights on prelims. But that fight also reinvented Chael Sonnen. I mean, let's, you know, remember back to the WEC days where he was beaten by Paulo Filho and was, you know, ended up being, you know, was in that weird fight with him in the rematch where he was, you know, Filho was just a zombie. And, you know, he's had some losses. I think he lost to Maya, and Maya's one of Maya's first bigger fights in. And, you know, he did a great job reinventing himself there. And you know, again, it's not a crack against Sonnen. He is incredibly good. He is very good against Anderson Silva, but, you know, we may have overrated him and it may be a little bit more of an aberration where people are more excited. Yes, it would have been better business in all the ways around if he would have won that fight. I can see how you can make that case. But with that said, maybe the first fight was more of the aberration than anything else.
Also on the show, we had the retirement fight of Tito Ortiz. He faced Forrest Griffin. And the first question, Mike, it was an awesome fight, by the way. It was like an old school battle. There's a fight earlier in the show. I forget who was in it, but the guy, when he left, just passed by press row and he was swearing and cussing. And he goes, ah, people don't want to fight anymore because somebody out wrestled him, you see. So, but here in this fight, it was like, this was an old school UFC fight. These dudes were fighting. It's like, I'm going to punch you in the face and try and knock you out, or I'm going to try and take you down and beat the crap out of you on the ground. It's like two old legends just doing it like it used to be done. And how did you score this fight, Mike?
I actually had it slightly for Forrest Griffin because I didn't want to wuss out and give the first round a 10-10. So I had Griffin barely winning that one. I had him winning the second, but Ortiz clearly winning the third.
We're going to talk about this when we come back from the break. It was a amazing situation in a lot of different ways, from not really having much of a retirement ceremony for Tito Ortiz to the fans outraged at the finish to Forrest Griffin stealing the mic from Joe Rogan and interviewing Tito post-fight. We'll talk about all that when we come back. That's right. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're broadcasting this week from Las Vegas, the site of UFC 148, Silva versus Sonnen 2. We are here talking about the Tito Ortiz fight with Forrest Griffin, and a very interesting fight. It was a great fight inside the cage. I had picked Forrest Griffin. I thought that he was probably going to knock out Tito, to be honest. But Tito survived three rounds, and in fact, there were a lot of people, in fact, pretty much everybody I ran into after the show last night, that first question had nothing to do with Chael or Anderson. The first question is, why did you score the Tito fight? They thought that Tito Ortiz won this fight. And in the final 10 seconds of this fight, I know that Tito thought he won the fight. I know that most of the fans in the building thought he won the fight. And I know that Forrest thought that he won the fight. Because in the last 5 minutes, or 5 seconds actually, Forrest just folded, to steal a term from Las Vegas. He just threw up his hands and he walked away. And the horn sounded and run, Forrest, run. Again, he ran out of the cage, flipped out. Dana White found him and maybe not so politely told him to get back into the cage. And in fact, as he noted at the press conference, you can guess what I said to Forrest. So he forced Forrest back into the cage. And lo and behold, they announced the winner of this fight is Forrest Griffin. And the fans were so mad. And I was like, oh boy. Because actually there was a guy next to me who was in the press area, by the way, so he shouldn't have been doing this, but apparently he'd put money on Tito. And oh my God, you should have heard this guy for the last minute of the fight just going absolutely nuts because he's watching his money. You know, he's expecting Tito to be knocked out any time, and Tito survived, and he was so excited and happy. And when they announced that Forrest had won, I thought, this dude's going to go on like a shooting spree or something like that. This guy's mad. But anyway, Forrest grabs the mic, and he interviews Tito and everything like that, and the fans kind of diffuse the situation a little bit. But later at the press conference, poor Tito was just like, he was so sad. He thought he won a fight that he ended up losing. He explained that in his first ever UFC fight, He was interviewed by Joe Rogan, and he said, Joe, someday I'm going to be something, and I want you to be there for it, or whatever he wore his heart upon his sleeve, as he noted at the weigh-ins all week, and he was very, he's very deep thinker here about all this stuff, and so he wanted to be interviewed by Rogan after his final fight, and Forrest apprehended the mic, so Tito was very unhappy about that, and Forrest ended up apologizing, and Forrest was late to the press conference, and Dana's like, I don't know where Forrest is. He may be running home right now. But he did show up, and he apologized, and that was the end of the career of Tito Ortiz. There was no big ceremony. There was no big video package. There was nothing the night of the show. They had something in the afternoon at the Expo, but night of the show, nothing. And he came in, he fought his fight, he was very popular, and now it's over. And at the press conference, they said, Tito, what do you think about maybe doing one more fight? And he sat there, and he looked around, and he just goes, nah, I think I'm done. So this appears to be the end of Tito Ortiz. And Mike, what did you think of the fight and the whole spectacle about it?
I think they didn't take advantage of the spectacle. And Forrest Griffin, being the dunce, definitely didn't let him take advantage of the whole thing. I mean, Ortiz, you know, what a way. I mean, calling him the people's champ now. It's amazing the direction his career is taken. Especially in the last few fights, the win over Bader and taking the Evans fight on short notice and putting up a yeoman's effort there. And, you know, I didn't think he'd get knocked out, but I didn't think he'd win the fight. I thought Griffin would win it pretty decisively. And it was just came down to those leg kicks and the damage. I mean, you know, that was shown all over Ortiz's face in the press conference afterwards. It was shown during the fight too, that the damage that Griffin was doing with those punches. And, you know, you got the takedown early. But, again, I really thought Griffin came back. And with the amount of punishment he was laying in there, even though it didn't look fancy or spectacular or anything like that, he won the first round by doing the more damage. Ortiz had the big knockdown in the second round to begin. But then Griffin came back, and again, with the leg kicks and with a lot of hard punching in those exchanges, even though Tito was standing in there, which was rallying the crowd around him, you know, Griffin won that second round there, too. So, yeah, in the third round, Ortiz did win that, and Griffin did go and run from the ring. And I was there in Philadelphia when he got slaughtered by Anderson Silva, and he went running out of the ring, and apparently went running out of the building, too. So I don't know what it is with his running fetish or anything like that, but it was a little bit disappointing in that, you know, Ortiz is, he's one of the few aberrations out there. He started his career that night in that tournament in 1997, and he was the poster boy for that promotion when at a time, one of its darkest periods, he was the guy that they would prop up there with the playmate, Victoria Silvestad, and do all that stuff. And I don't think they actually drove home. And what a surprise with all the video they have, all the beefs he's had with Dana, with everything that's gone on. It surprised me they didn't make more of a big deal out of it to the general public. I don't know if they did it there, Brian. Obviously, you're there, but I don't think they drove it home enough that here's a guy that only had one fight outside of the UFC. I mean, for all of these years, he was one of the cornerstones of that promotion. I don't think they did a good job driving it home to a relatively new fan how important this guy is and why he is in their Hall of Fame, hands down.
Well, no, they had the UFC Fan Expo induction of him into the Hall of Fame, but at the actual show itself, I obviously couldn't hear the commentary. I was in the crowd, but if you were in the crowd watching this event, I mean, you'd probably have forgotten it was Tito Ortiz's retirement fight. I mean, they called him out and he did his thing and he left, and just like pretty much, except for the Forrest thing, it was just like any other fight.
Did they have an event at the pool party to celebrate Tito's last appearance?
Sadly, I never made it to a UFC sponsored pool party.
Damn it!
But since you mentioned it, we should talk about that. As noted at the beginning of the show, this is the UFC's WrestleMania weekend from this point forward. At this point, they're calling it the International Fight Week, which actually is a name I don't really like, largely because when I hear International Fight, I immediately just think IFL, which is long since dead. And to me, there should be the word Ultimate in it somewhere. I would be fine with Ultimate Fight Week. I think it'd be a fine name. Somebody on our board suggested the Octagon every July 4th weekend. You don't like that one?
That kind of makes me laugh for some reason. I don't know. It's like the F4W Con. It somehow reminds me more of a Heyman hustle than it does a gathering event of people.
Sure. I'm fine with Ultimate Fight Week. I think they should switch it up to that. And I think they should have like a name for the event every year. Like you could call it Octagon 1 or Octagon 2 next year or something like that. I don't know. Whatever. But the point is, it's a week-long thing now. And they, it's kind of, I don't want to say it was last minute, but it seemed to me, and I follow this stuff, that a lot of this was added the last minute. I know they've had the name International Fight Week for at least a couple of months, because I got a press packet that had been sent out a long time ago, actually, that billed this as the International Fight Week. But they had pool parties. They had the UFC Octagon truck everywhere. They sent the ring girls all over the place. They had concerts. They had, I mean, it was a week-long thing. They had two press conferences. They had a bunch of stuff for the media. Dana was just, he was so thankful to the media for covering the deal, because he never, honest to God, this was bigger than UFC 100 in terms of media, and that was the biggest media event I've ever seen media turnout for UFC. I mean, they usually run their press events in kind of a smaller room, and it can get kind of crowded, but they still get everybody in there. They moved this one into a giant ballroom, the size of which they use for, like, Mayweather fights at the MGM, and it was packed, just people all over from Brazil and everything like that. And I'd say probably 3,000 Brazilians were actually at the show. There were Brazilians everywhere. After the show, I left, and I'm walking to the press room, and everyone, all the fans are leaving the building, and they're singing in Portuguese. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. It felt like I was in Brazil, and they're all happy and singing in Portuguese, and it was crazy. And anyway, the point of this is they had a bunch of different things for the media as well this weekend, including they're doing a new deal. I don't know if this is Dana's way to get his revenge, but they're now doing a clinic for reporters where the reporters get to put on their, sweats and a t-shirt, and they go in and they're taken through like a wrestling clinic and a jiu-jitsu clinic and a stand-up clinic. And I guess the idea is, listen, you reporters, we're going to show you what it's like and try and educate you a little about these things so that when you report about it, you'll have a better understanding of what's going on in the octagon, which is actually a pretty cool idea. They should do it for judges more than anything else. But, somebody asked, is this your revenge on us, Dana? And Dana was like, I would love to get some fighters in there to, work out with some of you guys. But no, it's just for the... But it was pretty cool, and they had a bunch of stuff at the Fan Expo. If you've been to one Fan Expo, to be honest, you've been to them all. But if you've never been to one, they're kind of cool. The lines for the stars were, like, out of control. And you'll be sad to hear this, Mike, but if you want an interview with Alistair Overeem, or not an interview, a picture, a t-shirt, or whatever, or George St. Pierre, for example, the line was just preposterous. But guess who had no line at all?
Wrestling superstar Virgil?
Wrestling superstar Don Fry.
Okay, that's one of the more offensive things I've ever heard in my life. How can Don Fry?
Yes.
How can this happen?
I don't know, but like, well, actually, first, my wife is not much of a fight fan. She knows a couple of people, but doesn't watch the shows much or anything like that. But she knows the Korean Zombie. And I was walking around, and there was a bunch of Korean Zombie shirts. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to get one of these for her as a surprise. So I grab one of the shirts, and I'm going to pay. And I look over, and there's a little Asian fella sitting at a table, like, by himself. And I'm like, that can't be the Korean Zombie. There's nobody here. And sure enough, that was the Korean Zombie. So they said, go get in line. And she was second in line upon hearing that. And she got her shirt signed and a photo with the Korean Zombie. And she was happy as a clam. But Don Fry was another one. We're walking by, and my buddy Junior Horseman's there. And he'd grown a mustache for our convention. A big handlebar mustache. The craziest thing you've ever seen. And he walks by, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, my God, look. And there's this giant dude. Don Fry is a big dude. Giant dude, cowboy hat, huge stash. And we're like, oh my God, it's Don Fry. And there's like virtually nobody there. So Horseman got a picture with Don Fry. It's on the front page of the website right now, WrestlingObserver.com. And it was awesome. So anyway, we're going to head to a break, everybody. We'll get Mike's thoughts on that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 20 minutes. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and we are here talking a number of different subjects, as we are every day. You can always head to WrestlingObserver.com for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts and radio shows. Dave Meltzer and I have been doing shows every night here from Las Vegas. We had a show on Friday following the weigh-ins. We had a show Saturday night following the event. We have a show tonight only for subscribers talking TNA Destination X, and a show tomorrow night as we do every Monday after Raw. So if you love radio, this is the place to go. Daily radio shows, and in addition to that, every show that we have ever done on this website is archived right now at WrestlingObserver.com. There's tens of thousands of hours of audio. If you love this radio show, I guarantee you, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. You can download shows whenever you want. If you have a long commute to work, if you like listening to stuff when you work out, if you love listening to stuff in your cubicle, no matter what you're doing, you will always have wrestling and mixed martial arts audio to listen to as a subscriber. I do shows virtually every single day, sometimes several shows per day, and they're all available to you, $10.99 a month. It's all you have to pay. Sign up at WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But I guarantee if you like the show, you'll be signing up probably for the rest of your life. If you want a sample, well, you're listening to one right now. If you want more, go to WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Four free, I think. Including an interview with a man who is wrestling tonight, Joe Park Esquire. It's a free interview up right now at WrestlingObserver.com. Go listen to it. And again, if you like what you hear, sign up, and I promise you, you won't regret it. Now, before we talk about Destination X here tonight, Mike, any final thoughts on poor old Don Fry?
I can't even. I wish we had several more hours so I could lament why it's so terrible that Don Fry had an empty booth. Although, I'll say this, maybe he had nobody there at his booth because the fact he doesn't exactly look like the Don Fry we remember, even though the mustache was thick and everything, he had the stars and stripes trunks and the build and the whole nine yards, and now he just kind of looks like one of the Blackjacks. And I don't mean in their prime either. I mean, he looks like Blackjack Mulligan now with that hat on. Like, he's almost unrecognizable. I'm going to blame it on that. Don Fry's costume change is what did it all.
I see.
Like Superstar Graham. That's why they thought he was dead. Nobody knew that was Don Fry.
I see. That's as good a theory as any. All right. Destination X. We got to talk about this show. It begins at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, right after the show goes off the air. And we're going to be up later tonight recapping it. Wrestling Observer Radio at WrestlingObserver.com. But a quick look at the show.
We'll reveal that there is no Joe Park, unfortunately.
That's right. There are 9 matches here on this show. And actually, you're right. There is no Joe Park. I was wrong.
He's getting ready. He's in Chicago right now. He was sending out
tweets.
He's getting ready. He's fired up over the fact that he is going to have Bully Ray one last time in the ring coming up in 2 months.
It's next week.
Or next week.
For free on television.
I can't believe they're giving this away. I'd pay for that.
Well, maybe they'll have a goofy finish to lead to a stipulation match at the pay-per-view.
Acceptable.
Now let's look at this card. The main event is Bobby Roode versus Austin Aries, the world champion versus the former X Division champion. He's vacating at the beginning of this show. And it is for the TNA World Heavyweight title. The gimmick is that Austin Aries agreed to do this under the stipulation that every year at Destination X, whoever is the X Division champion can turn the title in for a heavyweight championship match. And I expect this match to be great. In fact, as I said last night on the show, if you're listening to this and you didn't buy the pay-per-view last night, Sun and Silva, and you only watched the prelims, this show will be 10 times better than those prelims.
Yeah, this show could be, like, this show up and down could be really awesome. I mean, with what they've already announced, obviously they haven't, you don't know what's going to happen with the Destination X stuff quite yet. But with what they have with the main card, I mean, Austin Aries has been able to step out and really make a mark, and I don't think anyone besides James Storm should take the belt off of Bobby Roode, but obviously it's going to take some time after the Bound for Glory series and the whole nine yards to get to that point. But with what they've done with Austin Aries, with how they presented it, with how they have announced that they've given a reason, yes, they're going to have theme pay-per-views, and if you're going to do that, have a reason that people are looking forward to it, And I think you have that with what they've done now with the X Division champion. If he wants a shot at the world title, relinquishing his right to do so, if a heel tends to be, you know, ends up being champion one day, they could have him refuse it and have, he can have his own match or something like that. I think they've done a really good job all the way around with this. And I think Austin Aries, even though I don't believe he's going to win tonight, he looks as if he's going to be a legitimate player in that company moving forward. And that's one of the things they needed were, you know, big breaths of fresh air. And now they've got one with Austin Aries.
Aries has been awesome. I don't expect him to win the title, but I think he'll raise his stock tonight, so to speak. And should be a great match. AJ Styles and Chris Daniels are having a last man standing match, which is kind of interesting because it's not the end of their feud or the whole Claire Lynch storyline. So last man standing is usually something you do last, but not here. Should be a great match. Don't really have much else to say. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows with what they've done with this angle. This could go a lot of different ways. Claire Lynch could, I don't know, distract Daniels, knock him off the ropes or something like that. Obviously, Kazarian, who is going to be into this mix somehow. I mean, there's a lot of different ways this can go. I guess it really doesn't matter because of that what the ending is going to be. Let's just say Daniels wins. The bottom line is you get Daniels and Styles, and even though it's a last man standing match and there's all this, you know, other stuff going on around it, you know at least they're going to perform to a high level.
We've got Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe in a Bound for Glory series match. They have decided to up the length of the matches. It was originally a 10-minute time limit, which the idea was 10-minute time limit, have the guys work a little faster, add a little bit of excitement. And then after the first week, they decided, all right, 15 minutes. Give a little more time for the matches to build. Plus, when you put the matches on pay-per-view, you don't have to have Angle and Joe going 10 minutes. They can at least go 15. And you also can do the commercial breaks in the middle of a 15-minute match earlier than a 10-minute match, easier than a 10-minute match. So this will be 15 minutes. It should be great. And I don't know. I haven't looked at the point standings since Thursday, so I don't know who is where in the standings, but probably doesn't matter too much because I doubt either man. Actually, I think Joe was number two. I think he's second in the standings last I checked. But I don't expect either guy to get the title shot at Bound for Glory, so probably doesn't matter. But you never know.
I want to see him go 15 and then have him do the old school thing with wanting an extra 5 minutes and to go on like that. Because, again, looking at this card realistically, too, there is a possibility that you could do that with some of the lengths of the matches of the X Division tournament. So it doesn't matter. Samoa Joe gets to face Kurt Angle, and he's obviously, they've been arguably their best opponents in that promotion. So Kurt Angle, you know, is going to be great, and Samoa Joe could use a good performance or two here to stay in the mix. And yeah, obviously it's going to be good.
So we've got an X Division tournament here on this show. And here's how it's going to work. There are four guys who had qualifying matches and lost. Dakota Darso, the son of the Repo Man, in fact. Rubik's the Cube, as I like to call him. Lars Only, who was named after Lars Ulrich and Jerry Only, I believe. I can't think of any other reason to give a man this name. And Mason Andrews, Scorpio Sky. They're having a four-way, and the winner of that is going to end up in an X Division, Ultimate X match, at the end of the show. The other four guys are going to be the winners of matches involving Doug Williams, Kid Cash, Zema Ion, Kenny King, who we should talk about here in a moment, Sanjay Dutt, Rashad Cameron, and Flip Casanova, a man Dave Meltzer informed me who does a lot of flips. That's why he's the king of pro wrestling news reporting. So they're going to have a tournament, and the winners go into the X Division Ultimate X match, and the winner of that is the new X Division champion. And I haven't even thought about this till right now, but of those names, Mike, who do you expect to walk out as the X Division champion?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'll go with Kenny King. I'll go with Kenny King just for the hell of it. Sanjay Dutt, Douglas Williams, either one of those three, it would be great. I don't think it'll be Rubik's the Cube or anything like that, or Rashad Cameron. I don't know. I guess for me it comes down to King Dutt and and Douglas Williams, and I'll actually go with Kenny King getting the upset, and I we'll just go that direction because I have no idea. I do feel, though, that Jigsaw, a.k.a. Rubik's the Cube, will actually win his match to get in because I would figure in a match like Destination X, you know, obviously with all the flips and the high-risk maneuvers, I mean, there's a guy who knows how to control his body throwing it around and all that time in Chikara, so... And he and Dutt had a really, really good three-minute match 2 weeks ago. So I'll actually go with him getting in, but after that, Kenny King.
Kenny King was one half of the ROH Tag Team Champions with Rhett Titus. They won the titles, and Kenny King was without a contract. And he had been offered a contract. He didn't sign it. He had a verbal agreement of some sort. They allowed him to negotiate with other companies, but not wrestle for other companies. And long story short, he went to Orlando, and instead of just negotiating, he wrestled for TNA. I don't know if he has signed with the company yet, but he must be pretty confident he's going to be signed because ROH was, I guess to put it gently, outraged at this whole deal. They are outraged at Kenny King. I've talked to a lot of people in ROH, and they do not have good things to say about Kenny King. He is not going to be back. So he didn't have a good match on Impact, from all reports. I didn't actually see the match, but pretty much everybody said it was a terrible match, and I guess we shall see. If he does not have a breakout performance tonight, I don't know. I don't know. I know that... there were people who tried to push him towards WWE for a long time, and WWE didn't want anything to do with him. Much of it based upon Tough Enough, which was like a decade ago, it seems. So WWE is out of the question, and ROH is out of the question. So if he doesn't get this gig with TNA, I don't know. Maybe Dragon Gate USA or have to look for work overseas. So he took a big gamble, which he has admitted, and I guess we'll see if it pays off tonight.
He is, but he obviously wasn't happy there anyway, and he was looking for it out, and I think he got it. And even though ROH may be angry, it's an issue of, you know, there's a lot at play, probably more than we have time for here. But, you know, as far as talent goes, he's actually got it. You know, he went and trained with Nick Bockwinkel for a long time. He's got a lot of experience. And if you, when you look at those names, again, without Douglas Williams, if you take him out of the mix, and Sanjay Dutt has been around for a while. I don't know what his deal is, although I'd like to see him stay in TNA too. If you're going a little bit more long-term with anybody out of that list, I would figure it's either going to be Kenny. I would figure Kenny King's going to be that guy. So I hope he's got a good performance tonight because, obviously, I don't know what the deal is with Douglas Williams, Cash, and Zema Ion's not ready, I don't think, to carry the X Division. Hopefully he has a good performance because this is a good shot for Kenny King. And a real show, he's going to be on national TV every week. So, you know, now is a good time to prove it.
Don't forget that Zema Ion has had quite a push of late, so it's possible he could end up as the X Division champion. But we'll see. This show airs starting at 5 o'clock.
I hope it's not Flip Casanova.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe he'll do a lot of great flips, and they'll flip belt to him. I don't know. Show airs right after this program ends, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. We'll be back in just a moment. For the final segment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. The TNA Destination X pay-per-view is starting in just a moment. After the show ends, after the TNA pay-per-view ends, in fact, during the pay-per-view, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com for live running play-by-play by Dave Meltzer. Follow along all the matches. Dave will be recapping them as the show goes on live. And then later on tonight, we'll be up with a brand new radio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, an exclusive radio show talking Destination X, UFC, all of the news from the weekend, and Raw tomorrow. And I would say as a preview, like a teaser, we're going to talk about Raw now, but I actually have absolutely no idea what's going to be on Raw tomorrow night. I remember back in the day, you know, pro wrestling shows were episodic, so you could kind of know what was next. You know, what's the big main event for next week? What's going to be happening on the show? Raw's tomorrow, I have absolutely no idea what's going on. I would guess there are probably people in WWE have no idea what's going on because Vince is probably tearing up the script as we speak to have it rewritten. But Ross, tomorrow, only a couple of weeks left, and then it's 3 hours every single week, Mike. Are you ready?
No. No, I'm not ready. They're not ready. I mean, no offense. I love Albert. I love Tyson Kidd. Why are they in a ladder match for the SmackDown version of the heavyweight title? It makes no sense to me. I think there's one guarantee on Raw tomorrow night is John Cena will appear.
Wait a second. Albert and Tyson Kidd in a ladder match for the SmackDown? Did I miss something?
Wait, was that on last week's SmackDown? I mean, they were playing them into being into the ladder match.
I see, the Money in the Bank match.
Yes.
I was baffled. I thought they'd announced that Albert and Tyson Kidd were having a ladder match on Raw. It's like, well, what?
No, but I mean, this is where they're at right now with no rhyme or reason, and they're not ready to go to 3 hours, and I'm not ready to watch it every 3 hours, four 3 hours every week.
I can tell you this, they are not ready to produce 3 hours every single week, but they're going to try. So we're going to wrap it up, everybody. I want to thank you all for listening. I had a great time here in Vegas this weekend, and next year, International Fight Week and the Figure Four Wrestling Observer Convention, try and make it out here. It's a great time. We're going to try and drag Mike out one of these years, but it's always awesome. So thanks to everybody. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to folks at Sports Byline. Thanks, Mike, as always. We'll talk to you again later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.